Of you have need of something to help you see. No, well, okay, that's nice, Gene, as he puts on his glasses. Isn't that an amazing thing? For those of you who have experienced, for those of you who already have 20/20 vision, you are so blessed. But for those of us who are challenged with our vision, do you remember the day that you walked into the doctor's office and all of a sudden he had that little machine and he's moving the little dials around, and then all of a sudden things are coming into clear focus and clear focus, and all of a sudden you begin to say, oh, I didn't know there were letters on that wall. And then all of a sudden you can see all the letters in front of you, and then finally you leave that office and then you wait for your glasses or your contacts or whatever it is. And then the day comes when you put them on and all of a sudden you can see things clearly. The light seems so sharp and the colors seem so so clear, and it's sort of hard to get used to for a while. Oh, I didn't know that this looked that wonderful, that beautiful. Maybe you looked up at a sunset. Maybe it had been a long time since you actually saw a sunset where the colors were so just beautifully separated and things weren't mushed together anymore, and it was just brilliant. It's a beautiful thing when you have the opportunity to experience that. But when we are struggling with our vision, sometimes what we see can be deceiving. We can think we see something, but we don't really see it. When the doctor, eye doctor, takes you into his office and you look at something on the wall and you see that it might be an E, but you call it a P. You're convinced that's a P. Or there might be a Q and you think it's an O. Now, according to your vision, you think that what you're seeing is really the letter that you're seeing, but in actuality, it's something else. The truth is that only Jesus has the power to give us the vision to see those things that are most important. Remember one time I had this amazing experience, saw something amazing. So some of you know this story, so forgive me if you've heard it before, but one time we were in Vancouver. We had just moved there. We'd been there about 2 or 3 weeks. And Faith sent me off to the Home Depot or whatever to buy something. And so I go and I buy it. It's dark out. It's in November. Get in the car. And as I'm leaving the Home Depot, there was a bridge that separated where we lived from the town of Richmond where I was. And so as I'm driving over this bridge, I had one of the most extraordinary experiences. I looked up and I saw lights in the sky. Lights. I mean, just these beautiful, sharp lights. And as I was driving, these lights just seemed to be getting bigger and bigger, and they were everywhere. And it was the most spectacular thing, and all of a sudden it hit me. The Lord's returning. It's the Lord. He's coming. I'm riding in the car and I see these lights across the sky. I mean, just vivid and beautiful, and it seemed like it was just spread out. I'm actually alive when the Lord is coming back. And as I'm riding in the car over the bridge, I'm just saying, I want to go up into the presence of God with my family, and I'm on my way home. And then all of a sudden, as I'm riding, I'm realizing, you know, those lights are staying in the same place, and they're not moving. And is the Lord taking his time? Well, if you know anything about Vancouver, one thing you need to understand is that they have a rainy season in the Northwest. And it rains every single day. And it'll rain every single day for weeks. Well, we'd been there 2 or 3 weeks. And this was the first clear night we were there. What I was seeing wasn't the Lord coming back. It was all of the lights on the ski slopes that surrounded the city. But at that moment, I thought to myself, this is the first time I had seen it in the time we were there. I thought it must be the Lord coming back. Well, that was a high moment, a low moment, all in 1 second, and an embarrassing moment. And those things occur. But the truth is that when we think about vision, only Jesus has the ability to really enable us to see the most important things, the most important things. And so we notice this in this text as we are developing it together. You might remember that Jesus has widespread popularity, but he is deeply misunderstood. He is deeply misunderstood. It seems as if nobody really got him except for maybe the Syrophoenician woman that we looked at a few weeks ago in chapter 7, verses 24 through 30, and she was the least likely person you would think would get Jesus given the fact that she was a Gentile, she was from a pagan background, but somehow she got Jesus when everybody else seems to fail to get him. We have to remember that at this point in the narrative, Jesus had been rejected by just about everybody, and that's the way it's kind of constructed to show you this. Jesus was rejected by the political leaders of the day. He was rejected by Herod the Great, Herod Antipas. He was conspiring to go after Jesus already at this point. Jesus was rejected by the spiritual leaders of the time. Jesus was rejected by the people in his own village. Jesus was rejected at this point in the narrative by his own family. And so we can see in Jesus' life there is this polarization that was taking place. There was this wide gap between who he was and who people thought he was. And even the disciples, they didn't get him. In fact, just a few verses before this, in Mark chapter 8, verses 17 and 18, Jesus said to his disciples, Do you not yet perceive or understand? Are your hearts hardened? Having eyes you do not see, and having ears you do not hear? And do you not remember? So here you have Jesus with the people who are closest to him, his disciples, and many scholars think that they had been with Jesus now for probably a year at least, and they don't get him. And so in the middle of this text is put here for a specific reason. Mark is a master at showing us of linking the story together so that it makes a coherent picture. Jesus is going to explain to us why some people can't get his message and why other people can. And so the first thing we notice here, the first observation though, as we look at the story and really appreciated Dana and the telling of that story. That's a good way to memorize scripture, isn't it, Dana? To learn songs. Music teaches us scripture. Well, the first observation we can make about this section that we're looking at is that Jesus is not afraid to touch the broken. Jesus is not afraid to touch the broken. You ever walk down the street and maybe see someone who was laying in the gutter, and they're there, and they come up to you, and you are afraid of what? You're afraid of touching them. Maybe not you, maybe some of us in this room, but there can be this palpable fear when somebody comes up to us, maybe who's been sleeping on the street, of embracing them, of touching them, of shaking their hand. What's interesting about the story of Jesus and what we notice here in this text is that Jesus isn't afraid to touch someone who is broken. In fact, the Jewish Encyclopedia says that the blind were considered outcasts, along with cripples and lepers, and they were kept outside of town limits. Now, it appears in this story, Jesus is in the town of Bethsaida, which is the hometown of Peter, Andrew, and Philip. And as he's in this town, it appears that this man is within the limits, perhaps somehow, of this town, but he would have been an outcast in that day and in that culture. And so we notice here in verse 22, it says, "And they came to Bethsaida, and some of the people brought to him a blind man and begged him to touch him." This idea of begging is like it is in English. It's the idea of pleading. They pled with Jesus to do something about this man's situation. He was an outcast and he was hopeless. And these people understood that the only one who could help him was Jesus. And all they were really looking for was for him to be touched in his blindness. Well, the second word that we notice here is touch, to touch a blind man. And we notice earlier that Jesus, and it's also recorded in Luke chapter 5, verse 13, Jesus touched a leper. We also remember that when Jairus, the synagogue ruler, asked Jesus to heal his daughter, he wanted Jesus to touch his daughter so that she would be healed. In fact, we have another story about a woman who had a bleeding issue. And this would have made you unclean, her particular issue. And so she was unclean and no one could touch her and she couldn't touch anyone, but she knew. Remember the story we talked about a few months ago where the woman decided that if she could only touch even the hem of his garment, she could be healed. People understood that there was something powerful in the touch of Jesus. And so I love this picture that we have in verse 23. It says, "And he took the blind man by the hand, and he led him out of the village. Again, the text is emphasizing the fact that Jesus took the blind man by the hand. Well, why would Jesus have taken this man by the hand? Because he was blind. There were other people with the man, but what did Jesus do? Jesus took his hand and he walked with him. As you know, the last 2 weeks, I've been in Louisville, Kentucky, taking classes. And one of the sweetest pictures I saw, the whole time I was there, there were two Korean men. And they must have been in the program I was in, or maybe in a different program. But one of the two men was blind. And these two men were there the whole time I was there, the whole 2 weeks. And every time I saw them, they were both together. Every time I saw them, one of the men always had the other man's hand and he led him everywhere he had to go for 2 weeks. Every day you would see them in the cafeteria, walking down the hallways. And as they walked, the man who was helping the blind man walked with a smile on his face and they would just speak to each other the whole time. And I can't imagine a friendship that intimate like that. There was one man always holding the other man's hand, walking through the hallways, and I thought, how many people would do something like that? Would take 2 weeks of their life to help this blind man get around and attend the classes that he was in, and would be there to have conversation, and it was as if he never got tired of them. It's a beautiful picture of the Christian life. You couldn't see a better understanding of what it means to be Christians from the outside looking in than watching those two men interact. And you think about the story of Jesus, what does he do? He takes the man by the hand. Other people could have led the man, but Jesus took the man by the hand so that he could lead him and walk with him. And we notice here then Jesus deals with this broken man. The first thing he does, this seems very unusual when we look at this, but it says in the second part of verse 23, "And when he had spit on his eyes and laid his hands on him, he asked him, 'Do you see anything?'" Now think about this. It all seems very nice and wonderful, and then Jesus spits in his eyes. Then he put his hands on him. And then he spoke to him and asked, "Do you see anything? Do you see anything?" One of the beautiful things, again, that we see in this passage is that Jesus is not afraid to touch the broken. There's probably a lot of us who came into worship today and you feel broken. You're carrying burdens in your life that nobody else in this room knows. Perhaps if anyone does know, very few know it. And you know, you've been to enough places, you've talked to enough people, there is nothing anyone can do. But I want you to know that Jesus can bind up your wounds. Jesus can take your brokenness and he can make you whole. He can take those things that if you feel as if you can't explain, you feel as if nobody will listen, you feel as if when you do explain, people are tired of hearing it. Do you know that Jesus is never tired of hearing from you? Here is the creator of the heavens and the earth, who came in flesh, who is incarnate. The one to whom everything that there is points. He is the fulfillment of all the promises of the Old Testament. Everything in the Bible is written ultimately about Jesus. And what does he do? He takes the hand of an outcast and he walks with them. Walks with him. You feel like an outcast sometimes? You're never an outcast with Christ. And so, that's the first thing we notice. The second thing is, Jesus has the power to make the broken whole. Jesus has the power to make the broken whole. While I was taking these classes, one night I went back after a long day of lectures and I sat down in a chair and I took out my phone and I started reading the news. Wonder what happened today. And as I'm going through the news, there was a story about a woman who was giving her hearing back and somebody recorded it so that, and this thing had gone viral. So on the news article that I was reading, it didn't actually have a link to the video. So then I went on YouTube and I typed it in and, you know, what was in that article. And then all of a sudden it popped up and there's this woman sitting in a doctor's office. And she's sitting in a chair and there's an audio person sitting at a computer. And they've got what I would imagine a cochlear implant now. The surgery had been done, and now they're going to hook it up. So for the first time, she would have the ability to hear, and she was probably in her 20s. And she's sitting there and in her seat, and all of a sudden, the audio person is typing in the computer and then shows her in sign language that she's gonna start turning up the volume in her cochlear implant. And so all of a sudden she said, now I'm going to do it a little bit at a time. And then she put the volume up a little bit. And then she said to her in sign language, can you hear anything? And the woman started shaking her head. Yes, I can hear. And so then she said, you want it louder? She said, yes. And she started putting it in. And it was just such a beautiful thing to see for the first time. This woman, as it began turning up the volume, the first person who spoke to her was her father. And you could hear the family in the room as she was saying she could hear. You could hear the family cheering. They were rejoicing. Slowly, one step at a time, the person started putting up the volume, and all of a sudden you see the excitement in the woman's face as she realizes for the first time in her life she hears the voice of her father. She looked at him and she said, it's different than I thought it was. And then in even a sweeter moment, on her father's knee was her little boy. And as the volume went up, for the first time in her life, she heard the voice of her little boy. I tell you, as I sat in that chair that night, I just couldn't help but going after. Then I realized there are all kinds of other times where people have recorded this, and you just sit there and you weep. You weep because for the first time, these people had the ability to hear these things that we take for granted. It was now given to this woman, and you would imagine that many times in her life, she never thought she would have ever experienced anything like this. And it's this beautiful miracle. Now we think about this text in front of us, and we see what Jesus did, and we can see the profound work that Jesus did in people's lives. And we notice here in the text, Jesus took this man privately and he asked him as he began this miracle. And this is the only miracle where Jesus does it in two stages. And he looked up and said, I see people, but they look like trees walking. Now we look at this and we say, well, why in the world did Jesus not heal him instantly? And there's a theological reason why Jesus didn't heal him the first time instantaneously like he did everyone else. But can you imagine if his friends walked with him and they were there present, can you imagine the rejoicing that would have occurred the moment that when Jesus did this and he looked up and he said that he could see men like trees walking around? Could you imagine, even though it wasn't perfect, even like the woman, the volume wasn't all the way up, even though she could only at one point hear faint, can you imagine the rejoicing that would have been erupting around this event as Jesus was doing it? Can you imagine what it would be like to be blind, which we can't, but we can somehow try to imagine what it would be like to be blind and then all of a sudden to have the lights turned on in our eyes so that we can begin to see? Can you imagine the joy that would have filled this man's soul? Now he's in the presence of Jesus, and Jesus is doing this work, and he's beginning to see for the first time, I assume. I don't know if he's never seen before. The text doesn't tell us. Whether he is seen for the first time or whether it's been a long time since he's been able to see. What a miracle. What a miracle this is now light comes to his eyes, and Jesus, though, doesn't leave him there, does he? It says, verse 25, then Jesus laid his hands on his eyes again, and he opened his eyes, and his sight was restored, and he saw everything clearly. I love this word for laid. It's actually used in Luke chapter 15, 5 to describe what a shepherd does when he takes his lost sheep and he lays them on his shoulders. That's exactly what Jesus did in this man's life. He opened his eyes so that he could see. Well, why did all this occur? Why did Jesus do it this way? It's because only Jesus has the power to make us see. And when I'm talking about seeing, I'm not talking about now physical sight, I'm talking about spiritual sight. In fact, this is illustrated beautifully in the next a few verses in Mark 5, 27 through 30. It says this, and Jesus went on with his disciples to the villages of Caesarea Philippi. And by the way, this area was an area within Israel that there was lots of paganism going on, lots of worshiping of other gods that was happening. It was sort of an unusual area in the land of Israel. And on his way, he asked his disciples, who do people say that I am? And they told him, John the Baptist. Others say Elijah. And others, one of the prophets. Now we notice Jesus' words to them, and we look at that and we say, that's a pretty impressive list, right? Who do people say that I am? Well, John the Baptist. Well, what did Jesus say about John the Baptist? He was the greatest one born under the old covenant. We notice that this is exactly what Herod was saying about Jesus. He wondered if somehow the spirit of John the Baptist had now gone into Jesus. Or we think about Elijah. We think about him as perhaps one of the greatest prophets. Such a great prophet that if you remember his story, he didn't physically die. He was taken up into heaven accompanied by a flaming chariot, horses. In fact, Elijah's the one that the people were waiting for to make the road straight for the coming of the Messiah. Sounds like a compliment. Perhaps one of the prophets. So even though there's all this rejection of Jesus, you see, wow, he's John the Baptist. He's Elijah. He's one of the prophets. But what I want you to know is that these are no compliments. These are no compliments for Jesus. Because the way that the Old Testament worked is that all of the things in the Old Testament, all of the things that occurred, all of these major figures all pointed to one major figure, and that was the Messiah. The life of Elijah pointed to the Messiah. The life of John the Baptist, who was a New Testament figure but born under the Old Covenant, his life pointed to the Messiah. The prophets, they pointed to the Messiah. And so on one hand, we see these things as wonderful, but the people, even those who thought about Jesus in a positive light, did not come to a place where they understood him fully. There were some people who were totally blind, some people who rejected Jesus completely. There were some people who saw in part. But in order to see with 20/20 vision, in order to see clearly, you must see Jesus as Messiah. And this is exactly what happens here in this text. It's easy to talk about other people's opinions, but it's really hard when we have to talk about our own. And so Jesus asked them, "But who do you say that I am?" Peter answered him, "You are the Christ. You are the Christ." You see, this is the right answer, but this answer that Peter was given was from heaven. This answer was from God. You see, the only way that we can see spiritually is if God does something within us to change our hearts, to change our spiritual eyesight so that we can see him. He is the one who does this in our lives. And I just want to mention, just to give a few points of application. Number one, for the Christian, for the church, manipulation can never be part of the Christian's toolbox. Manipulation can never be part of the Christian's toolbox. There are some times where well-meaning Christians pressure people into making decisions to follow Jesus when the people who are making the decisions don't really mean it. Sometimes we as Christians, we're well-meaning, we do things, we handle things in such a way as to, with a sense in which if we can't convince them to do it, then it's never going to happen. We live as if it all depends upon us, whether or not somebody comes to Christ. In reality, the one who brings someone to this realization is Christ himself. We know from another place that the reason that Peter came to this decision, he came to this understanding, was because God revealed it to him from heaven. And so as Christians, we can never, ever use manipulation, as tempting as it could be sometimes. Because when we do this, we're making disciples of ourselves, not disciples of Jesus. The second thing is this: when we're dealing with people who don't know the Lord, prayer has to be at the center of our lives. If God is the one who reveals spiritual truth to other people, then we need to up our game in prayer, don't we? If we're going to see people come into a genuine relationship with God, one that's authentic and true, one in which Jesus comes into that broken person's life and transforms that person, then we must depend upon him to do it. And a big part of that is prayer. Praying for people who don't know the Lord, praying for people who are lost. And the third thing that we can note from this is that only Jesus can make us whole. Only Jesus can give us the power to see. There might be some here in this place, this day, some who feel broken. You might be carrying the loss of maybe somebody you lost in your life or something you lost in your life. You could be broken because you have fear about the unknown. You could be here struggling. You might feel broken because you have guilt as a result of decisions that you've made in the past. Maybe you feel broken because you've become so consumed with anger that it's destroyed every relationship in your life. We all carry our own brokenness. You carry your brokenness, I carry my brokenness. But I want you to know that there's somebody who can heal your brokenness. There is someone who can give you eyes to see and fill you with a joy that is so extraordinary that there is nothing in the world that can compare with it. We think about that woman sitting in the doctor's office as the volume is being turned up and as there's rejoicing among her family and as there's rejoicing in her life, and this is a physical restoration. I want you to know that if you actually come into the presence of the living God and you turn to Christ, He can give you such a joy that is infinitely greater than all of that. Though it is hard for us to imagine, I want you to know that relationship with Christ is so infinitely sweet, there is nothing in the physical realm that could ever compare with it. He can take all of your wounds, all of your brokenness, all of your pain, all of your sorrow, He can bind you up, and He can set you free, and He can give you a life like you never dreamed was possible. But only He can do it. You must go to Him and say to Him, Lord, save me. Only You can save me. Only You can change me. I've tried it time and time again. I've gone to talk to all kinds of people about my issues, and it never seems to get me anywhere. But Lord, I do believe, just like that man, I do believe that You can make me whole. I do believe that You can give me eyes to see. I do believe that You can do for me what no one else can do for me in my life. And so, Lord, take me. I'm Yours. Save me. Rescue me. Do you know Him? Let's pray.